Stephen, let's talk a little bit about the Admiral Byrd mission in, into the North Pole and just the incredible stories that surrounded it.
Well, first of all, he's probably one of America's greatest adventurers. He's got a pedigree that is phenomenal of both his Arctic and Antarctic adventures. Obviously, he was an admiral in the U.S. Navy, and he talked at length in his what was called secret diary because, again, one of his, I would say, the men that was closest to Byrd and what Byrd discovered in the North Pole, which I'll go into, was Admiral Forrestal. And as you know, Admiral Forrestal was one of the original founding members or participants in the original Majestic 12 group, which oversaw all of the UFO stuff. Now we'll get into the story. Richard Byrd is an amazing, amazing man. Now, this is, George, again, on the Coast to Coast website because I've laid out the background. I want people to know that we, the United States, have had so much access to so much amazing information that has been contained, suppressed, and I don't know how many people have been killed over the information that is represented from Byrd's discovery forward. But I think it's telling. I'll just read what he writes. He says this: I must write this diary in secrecy and obscurity. It concerns my Arctic flight of the 19th day of February in the year of 1947. By the way, he died in 1957. And what is astonishing is that he takes off on his flight log, and it's done in about 10 to 20 minutes he makes a new entry. And so we'll get to the most important stuff right away. And he says this, that at about 9-10 hours into his flight, 3 hours actually from the time he took off, both magnetic and gyro compasses are beginning to gyrate and wobble. I'm reading this word for word. We're unable to hold our heading by instrumentation. We're taking a bearing with the sun compass, yet all seems well. The controls are seemingly slow to respond and have sluggish quality, but there is no indication of icing. He says, in the distance is what appears to be mountains. Now, 29 minutes elapsed flight time from the first sighting of the mountains. It is no illusion. They are mountains consisting of a small range, and I've never seen these before. And he puts exclamation marks. He says, at 9:55, an altitude change to 2,950 feet, encountering strong turbulence. He says this, we're crossing, keep in mind, this is the Arctic. This is the North Pole. We're crossing over the small mountain range and still proceeding northward as best as can be ascertained. Beyond the mountain range is what appears to be the valley with a small river or stream running through the center portion. There should be no green valley below. Something is definitely wrong and abnormal here. We should be over the ice and snow. To the port side are great forests growing on the mountain slopes. Our navigation instruments are still spinning. The gyroscope is oscillating back and forth. Now here's where it gets fascinating. I alter altitude to 1,400 feet and execute a sharp left turn to better examine the valley below. It's green with either moss or a type of tight-knit grass. The light here seems different. I cannot see the sun anymore. We make another left turn, and then we spot what seems to be a large animal of some kind below us. 1947, remember. It appears to be an elephant. No, it looks more like a mammoth. This is incredible. Yes, there it is. I decrease altitude to 1,000 feet and take binoculars to better examine the animal. It is confirmed. It is a definite mammoth-like animal. I report this to base camp. And then he talks about going into the Green Hills, and the external temperature indicator outside his airplane over the North Pole indicates 74 degrees Fahrenheit. And they talk about the radio. They lose all contact with base camp. And then they talk about an amazing thing that happens, and this is where I guess we should start talking about. Countryside below is more level and normal, if I might use the word. Ahead we spot what seems to be a city. This is impossible. Aircraft seems light and oddly buoyant. The controls refuse to respond. He says, my God, off our port and starboard wings are a strange type of aircraft. They're closing rapidly alongside. They're disc-shaped and have a radiant quality to them. They're close enough to now see the markings on them. It's a type of swastika. He didn't say a swastika. Right. He said a type. This is fantastic. Where are we? What has happened? I tug at the control again. They will not respond. We are caught in an invisible vice grip of some kind. He says, our radio crackles and the voice comes through in English what is perhaps a slight Nordic or Germanic accent. The message is, welcome, Admiral, to our domain. We shall land you in exactly 7 minutes. Relax, Admiral. You're in good hands. And I note the engines of our plane have stopped running. The aircraft is under some strange control and now is turning itself. The controls are useless. So we've got, George, an actual 10-minute blow-by-blow account of something that was so incredible. Now, again, the people that surrounded Byrd after this flight, obviously, were all the highest-ranking military people in the history of the Navy, okay? And here's where it gets interesting. Anybody who's familiar with who has had control over the oversight, if you would, and control of everything relating to the alien since 1947 has been the Navy. You're an old Navy man.
Right.
So what's fascinating, too, is when you have the highest-ranking guys in the CIA, historically, up until recent appointments, they've always been admirals, or, forgive me, retired admirals. And so the control of the data flow of all of this unique archaeological, astronomical, alien technology, this has always been overseen by a group called Majestic 12. Now, years ago, there was a breakup in Majestic 12, and there are two factions. There are the factions that can kind of like that want to go to the dark side, and the factions that want to tell the American people the truth.
Right. And they haven't won.
Yeah, and the point that's been amazing is now, you know, right on your program tonight, on the 8th of November, we're talking about quantum shifts that have been happening both in the religious world and the scientific world. And it all has to go back to, everybody knows Roswell, everybody knows who's familiar with UFOs, but there is this entire a war going on, a panic going on. By the way, it's not just the U.S. The Russians are doing their own excavations. The Chinese are doing their own excavations. The Chinese are going to find out their history is a lot different than what they've been taught and what they've thought. And there's so much going on in China right now. And the position of the pyramids, whether the great underground sunken civilizations that Graham Hancock writes about in his book Underworld, I mean, what you've got is you've got the fingerprints of advanced intelligence, advanced technology. And when I say a history of all these things relates to heavenly beings coming down, mating with Earth women, producing giants, and absolutely spreading throughout the Earth, into the Earth, and under the Earth,